All right. Hello, everybody. Today is still the 28th of July, 2013, and we're going on with 136, Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 136, we're on page 546, and we've been talking about the purpose of Germany's attack on religion. It's not to establish a better approach to divinity, not that at all. We're talking about the destructive power of Pluto and how it destroys certain thought forms, how at times this is necessary, but not necessarily leading to the dissolution of the form of man. It's the triumph of death, but not necessarily physical death. And it frequently is frequently the death of or ending of old forms of civilizations, which cyclically come and go, of religious teaching when it does not serve the need of the spiritual nature, of educational systems. So I'll put that down, the ending of old forms, and the ending of certain religious teaching, which is unsuitable for progress in the present times, and the ending of educational processes which fail to educate the developing nature of man. Okay. Now, he's not talking about the death of religion or of forms of thought. Death as the great release, the great releaser which shatters the forms which are bringing death to that which is embodied. This is so important because living possibilities are contained within forms which stifle them, and they can have no true expression. Now, Germany, it is said, responded to a philosophical death in its lowest aspect. They sought the destruction of religion, except for certain of the ancient religions with which they seemed to have more affinity as they tried to reestablish the prominence of the ancient Teuton, godlike man. So this was to evoke the ancient gods such as they appear in the Wagner operas, and Hitler took this very seriously. He says their Nazism is unthinkable without Wagner. So they sought to evoke the ancient gods and to deify the forms of matter and to make the state supreme. These are the three factors which Nazism tried to instill. And to invert all spirituality. It was an inverted Shambhala impulse to which they responded, and they sought really to take man away from a true spiritual contact. Okay. Now we're talking about the approach of Russia, which is atheistic, and he says the completely atheistic approach of Russia to the problem of religion at the time of and during the period of the revolution is much more sound than the German approach. The spirit of man in its essential divinity can be trusted to arise unhurt from the experience in answer to the call of the undying spirit. So perhaps a type of humanism entered, and worship of a deity, the worship of which was surrounded by so much glamour and false egoistic expectations. These things were put aside with the idea that religion was the opiate of the masses and kept them from facing their situation in a realistic way. The undying spirit will always sound its call, and if atheism prevails for a while, it cannot hurt, we understand, the undying spirit within man, responding to the truly undying spirit. So this call can sound forth clearly in a void and be evoked by time and circumstance, unopposed, if the only difficulty with which it is confronted is the spirit of agnosticism and an attitude of questioning. Okay. So was the atheism of Russia, which really doesn't seem to exist now at all, simply a powerful disbelief in any possibility of a deity or of a religious dimension? Or was it really a spirit of not knowing, of agnosticism and an attitude of questioning? If that's the case, the door is still open. But if there is a virulent opposition to the possibility of divinity, then in a way we have another belief system, don't we? Distinguished by a non-belief in deity, which is just as strong as the belief of the believers. But as D.K. says here, but the imposition of the ancient myths in an effort to still the demand for truth and the carefully planned attack upon the Christ of the world is dangerous, evil, and will cause retrogression. So it was here the imposition of the ancient myths. They had long outlived their usefulness. They can be interpreted interestingly in terms of modern possibilities, but it is amounts to an attack on the hierarchy, an attack on the Christ, and on the plans of the Lord of the world for the externalization of the hierarchy and the Christ reappearance, the plans for the emergence of the second race soul. It's a retrogression back into the third aspect of divinity and the rule of matter, dangerous, evil, and will cause retrogression. Of these, the rulers of Germany were guilty. They did not succeed in quenching the spiritual life of the nation because religion in Germany was not corrupt as it was in Russia and needed not such a drastic purification. So in fact, they could not stamp out what was a relatively pure approach, apparently. These are points which thinkers would do well to remember. In mystical Russia, the seeds of the spiritual life are emerging to fresh beauty, and a triumphant religious ideal is on its way to manifest. And this now, many years later, 60 or 70 years later, we see this emerging. In Germany, ancient crystallized forms of belief are met with something more ancient still. And the combination of world dislike and decadent forms will make the lot of the German people one of great tragedy. Well, perhaps they have thrown, perhaps they have thrown this off. It might be the case. So we seem to find that the seeds of the spiritual life in Germany was not completely stifled. I don't know where it stands today, but perhaps more the fourth race soul has entered into the picture. So if there was a devotion to the ancient crystallized forms of belief, and met with something still more ancient, the combination of world dislike and decadent forms will make the lot of the German people one of great tragedy. This seems to have been avoided in the post-war period. In the consequent struggle for that which is spiritually alive, and in the effort to regain belief in the realities of divine revelation, and in the determination to right the evil wrought by her rulers to the world, Germany may someday regain the expression of soul life. And perhaps this will be in this fourth ray period, when from 2025 the fourth ray is entering again in its monadic aspect, probably stimulating the fourth ray soul of Germany, and perhaps through beauty and art, this contact with spiritual aliveness, with divine revelation, and the determination is there to right the wrongs of her rulers. Perhaps Germany is beginning to regain its soul life. We'll see, starting in another 10 or 12 years, as the fourth ray begins to come in more powerfully. To this end, she must first be released from the evil rule, which obviously was not yet the case when this was written, and then aided to regain her spiritual standing. It was high. There was a great philosophy. There was a great philosophical religion, pantheism, through Goethe and other philosophers. The connection with India was very strong. The rays are the same, only reversed. The fourth ray soul, first ray personality in India, the first ray soul and fourth ray personality, and the Aries rules the soul of both India and Germany. So there were many spiritual stirrings which Nazism stifled, and perhaps they can be somewhat regained. Recourse to the ancient crystallized forms of belief will not serve, nor will the evocation of the ancient gods, who have, in a way, no more place in man's modern spirituality, except as they symbolize processes through which all must pass. Pluto, therefore, comes into full force and expression. We're still dealing with Pisces, right? Still dealing with Pisces and its ruler Pluto and their effect in the modern world. Pluto therefore comes into full force and expression in order to stage the testings of the world disciple, and to this end brings in the potency of Scorpio, the sign of discipleship. So we have to realize that when a planet is potent, it brings through the influence of the signs it rules. And in this case, Scorpio. There was some place here where there was a rulership of Aries by Pluto. There was a definitely close association. We do have Aries-Pluto-Shambhala as a potent triangle, and that which ends the old and begins entirely in a new and resurrected manner, this is Pluto and its relationship to the sign of new beginnings and resurrection is very strong, the end and the new beginning. So under these influences, the death of forms must eventuate, leaving the disciple free. Pluto, we understand, never destroys the consciousness. The dissolution of old group structures of thought, embodying worn-out ideas and ideals, must necessarily supervene. Crystallized old forms must dissolve and disappear. We have Uranus causing a breaking apart, a shattering. We have Neptune creating a dissolution. It dissolves what must go. And Pluto, pulverization, we might say, reducing everything to a non-formal state. But in their place, the undying spirit, impressed by revelation and sensitive to the emerging new concepts of truth, will create the needed new forms of appropriate expression. We have to remember that Pluto means death and regeneration. So the phoenix rises from its ashes. So there will always be a kind of always. There will be a promised rebirth with the influence of Pluto, and hence its strong connection as well to Aries, in which everything begins anew. So the death of forms must eventuate, leaving the disciple free. Okay. So we've seen how these three signs or constellations are operating in today's world. The Pluto factor was very strong in relation to Germany because, as I said, there is an association of Pluto with Aries for the reasons given, and Pluto is the ruler of Pisces, which is the personality of the German people, which was set up for destruction and a kind of rebirth by the efforts of the leaders to go down a path that was that invoked the Black Lodge and was filled with the densest type of glamour and retroactivity. Imagine hearkening back to a time some 250,000 years ago in the occult theorization of some of the leaders and those who had inspired the leaders, that retrogression back to the true and masterful psychic Teuton was what they sought. It was interesting. People have asked, why was it that the leaders of the German nation looked so very much unlike the master race which they idealized? And perhaps there was a great inferiority complex in many of them, and they were living out a fantasy concerning how they might be transformed into this glorious Teuton, because they did, after all, believe in reincarnation, so many of them. They had some kind of occult background. Hitler did, for sure. Himmler did. I don't know so much about the others. But the idea of reincarnation, I think, was strong with them. I believe that Himmler fancied himself to be a great German king of some 900 AD who drove back the invading hordes from the east, from Russia. This was how he fantasized about his nature. The reality was quite different. He was actually a rather strange-looking man, and he was involved in agriculture and chicken farming and things of that nature, a huge contrast between the idealized image of himself. Was it, did he see himself as Frederick Barbarossa, something of that nature? And the great invasion of 3 million German soldiers of Russia was called Operation Barbarossa. So there was a huge inflation of ego involved in so many of these people, and they compensated for their very evident failures and even ugliness by seeking some idealized Teutonic form. Some of the worst inquisitors are those who feel to a degree tainted by the very thing they persecute. Such was the case with Torquemada, who is said to have been partially of Jewish ancestry, and even this is thought to be the case with Hitler. And one of the most hateful and vicious of those who sought the final solution with respect to the Jews, his name was Reinhard. Reinhard Heydrich is what it was, and he was part of determining the liquidation of the Jews and the final solution. It's interesting how many H's there were. Hitler, Himmler, Heydrich. He was not a member of the group of seven, but he was very influential, and I believe that Goebbels named his children all with an H in a rather devoted following of the H of Hitler. So there was so much twisted psychology and glamour going on with that group. It had to be destroyed, and the Pluto-Pisces combination saw to the destruction, I suppose, with an Aries soul and a ray that corresponds to the ray coming into power in 2025. There will be a rebirth in Germany. In a way, there has certainly been an artistic rebirth. Probably there's still much to go through because the Tibetan sees these things from the occult perspective. So a great eradication of ancient forms, including the type of ancient form which Hitler and his group tried to impose upon the psyche of Germany, taking quite literally the operas of Wagner. Of course, maybe Wagner responded to those things as well. And he was also a notorious anti-Semite. Wagner said that the Jews should do everyone a great favor and incinerate themselves. And of course, that's precisely what happened later. They didn't do it to themselves, but they and many others died in the crematoriums in the death camps. Well, these are the influences, such are the influences which today are dominating the world. So what DK has done is he's taken Leo, Capricorn, Pisces, and given them an understanding, given them an interpretation which relates directly to the period in which he was writing. So, such are the influences which today are dominating the world, peaking in 1945, finding expression according to the type of vehicle which reacts to the impact, the type of consciousness, conscious response, and resultant activity is, as the occultist well knows, dependent on the quality of the vehicle which is receptive to the approach of any type of energy. The same energy will produce, we know, very different effects in different types of energy systems and mechanisms. Surprisingly so, even apparently contradictory and opposite effects. The interplay of the energy and the vehicle then produces consciousness of some kind, and this is the basic and unalterable law. So we have had two or three different visits concerning this great triangle of Leo, Capricorn, Pisces. Three different sections that have dealt with it, and this by far is the most practical of all and dealt with immediate world affairs. Maybe as a triangle, we no longer have to consider these three working together, but we certainly have to consider them working in their own way. And they seem so general, in a sense, stimulating the head center and the base of the spine, or the ajna in the throat and the solar plexus and heart, that somehow it seems that they must still be active in stimulating the disciple, but maybe not to the same degree as they were in the middle 1940s. He did say after 1975 they would die away, and that's interesting because that was the year of the first Shambhala impact occurring after the year 1825. So we've already had two Shambhala impacts since then. That's if you think about two Shambhala impacts within 25 years, this is a remarkable stimulation, and the world of humanity is doing all it can to retain its balance, probably very much with the help of the hierarchy that is offsetting some of the more difficult possibilities. In the few things which I've been able to say anent these constellations and their relation to our planet at this time, I trust I have made clear and practical something which esoteric astrologers need unceasingly to grasp, the fact that once it is established which constellations are at any time influencing our Earth, which planets, exoteric and esoteric, are transmitting their influence, and which rays are consequently active, it should be possible to prove the fact of these distributed energies by the appearance on Earth and among men of their appropriate results and expected response. people will be able to see that in this manner these sources are interpreted, and these are the very things that are happening on the world stage. So we have to know these connections. We have to know which are the constellations which are potent. No doubt when he comes out again with more work on esoteric astrology, he will tell us perhaps of new constellations which have swung into an effective relation with the Earth, and perhaps new planetary triangles. So if we know which constellations are at any one time influencing our Earth, which planets, exoteric and esoteric, are transmitting their influence, okay, as a result of knowing the triangles and their rulerships, and which rays, the rays of the constellations and of the planets, as you know, when we found out that the sun veiling Uranus was the ruler of Leo, immediately the seventh ray became of note, and then the fifth ray for Venus, hierarchically ruling Capricorn, and then the first ray for Pluto. So, and which rays are consequently active? It should be possible to prove then the fact of these distributed energies by the appearance upon Earth and among men of their appropriate results and the expected response. All it takes is fair-minded observation, and then we can see that they are actually working out in the world, and there will be a realization that what astrology says should happen is actually happening. At least those energies are visible and potent and are for all the fair-minded types to see. Okay, we're going in then to a new section, and it says three major planetary influences today. Within the solar system itself, three of the sacred planets are peculiarly active. So first we see Uranus, Mercury, and, Saturn. This is interesting. Why is this interesting? Because these are three of the rulers of the three constellations which have been under discussion. So Uranus rules not only Leo, but is related to Pisces. And Mercury is related to Capricorn. And Pluto, well, is it Pluto? Let's see. Saturn, it's Saturn. And Saturn to Leo. So these are precisely the three which have been considered as conduits of the three constellations which have been studied as a triangle. But probably DK will interpret them now maybe in a different way. Let's see, Uranus. This planet is the exoteric ruler of Aquarius. It is also the esoteric ruler of Libra and the hierarchical ruler of Aries. So that, of course, would relate Aquarius, Libra, and Aries. It is peculiarly active at this time and brings in the energy of the seventh ray. The circulating of its energies can be portrayed by the following symbol or diagram. And here we have been able to cut and paste this diagram. Aries, Aquarius, Libra, all ruled by Uranus, and the Earth, which has a very close relationship in mythology to the Uranus, the heavenly one. And they have much in common, actually, in terms of their rays. Uranus has a strong third ray, as the Earth does. Uranus has a strong first ray monadically, as the Earth does, and the Earth has a secondary soul, and Uranus, interestingly, is associated in a line of descent from Sirius, going through Pisces, with the second ray. So there's much in common with these two, and the earth is in close relationship to this far greater planet. Aries and Libra will bring in the energies of the Great Bear, we have been told, and Aquarius is always associated in some manner with the Great Bear. So let us see what DK is going to say about these, and I think the thing we'll do here is refer to this diagram, which will, I think, allow us to switch back and forth with greater ease. The triple inflow of seventh ray energy, colored by the force of three great constellations, is potent to affect major changes in our little planet. Well, what do we mean by a triple inflow? I think what we have to do here is do this. We have to say that each of the constellations is ruled by Uranus in one way or another. And via this rulership, the energy of the constellation reaches the Earth. The connection of Uranus to the Earth, I think it brings in the energy of the creative hierarchies particularly. And there is such a commonality there in the rays, and Earth is passing through a great revolution at this time, that there is a close connection. Also, I believe, in the distribution of solar systemic kundalini, there is a close connection with Uranus and maybe one other planet, it might be Saturn. So this is kundalini in the solar system, they have a connection. This triple inflow of seventh ray energy via Uranus, I would say, right? Colored by the force of three great constellations, is potent to affect major changes in our little planet. Changes towards initiating, inaugurating the new age, changes towards a balancing of the forces, changes towards group consciousness. It is interesting to realize that Aries, a name for Aries, the inaugurator, is rendered effective on Earth through the organizing potency of Uranus. Aries does bring in the seventh ray as well as the first. So two rays which are connected with Uranus, the seventh and the first, are strongly represented in Aries, with Uranus as the hierarchical ruler. So Aries is the source, the beginning, and the initiator of the new age and its coming civilizations. And of course, Uranus always has to do with inaugurating the new. It's the planet of the new in the constellation of the new. Aries is the source, the beginning, and the initiator of the new age and its coming civilizations, of the appearance of the kingdom of God on earth, and also of the individual initiate into the mysteries, especially at the time of the third initiation. Because Aries has this connection with being. It's an initiation into the mysteries of being we're talking about at the third degree. Then Aquarius is the present determiner of the future. So Aries is the inaugurator, and Aquarius the determiner of the future. And this also has to do with the new. Two forward-looking planets, Uranus and Jupiter, are both rulers in Aquarius. That which is now initiated in Aries will become manifested in Aquarius. It is a sign connected much with the seventh ray at this time, and with the lowest level of the hierarchies where manifestation occurs. And Libra will enforce the achievement of a point of balance, or esoterically speaking, of the escape from the opposing forces at the midway point between the source and the goal. An interesting occult phrase, we realize that Libra rules the royal road into Shambhala. And and the escape between the pairs of opposites. Which brings us into a condition of liberation. So we have the Aries, the inaugurator. We have Aquarius, the determiner of the future. And Libra, how should we say it, the equilibrizer, bringing escape and release. Equilibrizer. Okay. Right. So this is a very important triangle in relation to progress on the earth and to entering the new age. All of these will be important in the new age. Aries bringing it in, Aquarius sustaining it, and Libra keeping the balance, and as an air sign ruled by Uranus esoterically, there through very much of the new age, especially perhaps in the final decanate, which is ruled by Venus. So we have Aquarius, 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 Gemini, and Aquarius, Libra, with Venus as the final ruler. Bringing in Libra, bringing in its second ray potential and combining with the second ray potential of Venus and producing brotherly love and divine understanding. Okay. So Uranus is, let's see, what are we really dealing with here? Three major planetary influences today. So we have, he's presenting them to us in a different way. Saturn, Mercury, and Uranus have been presented in relation to the Great Triangle, but now he's looking for other associations for these three planets. They certainly are, they're not rulers, but they are closely connected to the triangle we have been discussing, Leo, Capricorn, and Pisces. But now the associations with these planets are now different. They're based on rulerships, and see what we're looking at here, the connections between these planets and the constellations are now, as now considered, are rulerships. And in the above, we saw three rulerships, hierarchically of Aries, Uranus, esoterically of Libra, and in an orthodox manner of Aquarius. Mercury is the expression of the fourth ray energy, and this is, as you know, peculiarly related to the fourth kingdom in nature, the human kingdom. Right. Let's see if we have any good... Okay. So, Mercury is the expression of the fourth ray energy, and this is, as you know, peculiarly related to the fourth kingdom in nature, the human kingdom. It is the esoteric ruler of Aries, hence it leads into the mysteries, and is also the exoteric ruler of Gemini, which is the sign of the major opposites as far as humanity is concerned, and by this we probably mean soul and personality, because it signifies soul and personality, consciousness and form, and it is also the exoteric ruler of Virgo, the mother of the Christ child, or the form and that which indwells the form. It is finally the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio, which is the sign of discipleship. So it has many connections, and via the rulership, we are being connected with all of these constellations via Mercury, namely Aries, Gemini, and the two triple signs, Virgo and Scorpio. It's worth rereading that. It is the esoteric ruler of Aries. Hence, it leads into the mysteries. That leading in or penetrating or initiation into is always the Aries theme. And it is the exoteric ruler of Gemini, which is the sign of the major opposites as far as humanity is concerned, because it signifies soul and personality, consciousness and form. It is the exoteric ruler, but also the exalted planet in Virgo, the mother of the Christ child, or the form and that which indwells the form, namely the sun aspect. But the father must also be considered. I am the mother and the child. I, God, I, matter, am. So we have here the, I am the mother and the child. Let's see here. I think so. I am the mother and the, it looks like we have it there. I am the mother and the child, I, God, I, matter, am. Yes, indeed. All right. So it is both the sun aspect and the mother aspect, but God and matter tell us that spirit and matter are found in Virgo as well. And as the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio, where the triumph takes place through the exaltation of the intuition. Probably we're going to have some triangles created here. This therefore brings into close relation four great constellations, each of which has a peculiar relation to the dualities with which man has a definite evolutionary concern. I suppose with Aries, there's spirit and matter. With Gemini, there's soul and personality. With Virgo, there's soul and personality, but also spirit and matter. And with Scorpio, the battle between the soul and personality particularly. So these are expressed in a unique manner for humanity through Aries, Gemini, Virgo, and Scorpio. And the following diagram is descriptive of the nature of that relation. Now we're going to look at these four constellations. I tried to cut and paste them the best I could, but did not succeed. But here they are. And interestingly, we have kind of an inverted pentagram in a certain respect. Yes, not equal necessarily, but the Earth is the lowest point and the bottom of the pentagram. The two triple signs are located here on the baseline, and the fire and air signs here. So we have really, we do have fire, earth, air, and water. And the earth and water are on the baseline and the fire and air on the top. Now, it says this brings into close relation four great constellations, each of which has a peculiar relation to the dualities with which man has a definite concern. Okay. When visualizing these diagrams, the symbol should be seen in rapid revolution. Mercury, the messenger of the gods, carries to humanity a certain type of force, and this precipitates a point of crisis. Mercury is called sometimes, let's get this correct, the star of conflict. So, yeah, here we go. The star of conflict. It brings about the next great revolution, which will lead mankind on to new experience, especially in connection with Aries, and to the revelation of the divinity, which it is the destiny of man to reveal. Hence, Mercury leads into the mysteries, because that is where the revelation of divinity does occur. However we might see this diagram in rapid revolution, we can imagine it. And I suppose it might all pivot around the Earth and some sort of quasi-cone-like figure might result. But this is definitely a manifestational diagram. it's not the upward pointed star. It has to do with descending into manifestation. So let's see further. Okay, well, that is what we've been given with Mercury. Let's see if there's anything else we can extract from that. Each one of these constellations has a direct relationship to the Earth. The longer arm is between Gemini and the Earth and Aries and the Earth, and the shorter between Virgo and the Earth and Scorpio. Each one of the constellations is related to the other three and to the Earth, every one of them. And there is a long diagonal here. The two that are ruled by Mars, in a sense, and the two that are generally ruled by Mercury are seen as creating the diagonals, and there is this important crossing point, a kind of a synthesis point for all the four constellations. All right. Now, when visualizing these diagrams, etc., it should be seen in rapid revolution, and the rapidity, of course, pertains to Mercury. Rapidity. And now on to Saturn. This planet applies the tests, and is so chosen or invoked because the third ray is not only its particular ray, but is also the ray of our planet. And we remember the close relationship between Saturn and the Earth. There is a great third ray entity in which Saturn is the mental body and Earth is the physical body, Mars being the astral body. Esoteric Psychology, approximately page 99-100. So there is a double third ray, possibly, in Saturn, but certainly it is a third ray monad, and maybe it is manifesting as the third ray on a lower turn of the spiral. It has the first ray as well, and much that connects it with the dense physical plane, the seventh ray. So there is a connection between the third ray of our planet, which is a personality ray, and the third ray of Saturn, which is not a personality ray. It's a monadic ray and perhaps a soul ray. I haven't quite worked that out. Other people feel they have and have given a third ray monadically to Saturn and also as the soul ruler. So the two notes synchronize, and perhaps we're dealing with the note Fa in some way. That is the third ray note. Saturn is also the hierarchical ruler of Libra, another third ray constellation, and therefore it brings to the manifestation of mankind and to the various hierarchies involved a point of crisis to which the clue and outcome lies in the recognition of balance. Balance is a great liberator. We have to understand that. As Saturn also controls Capricorn in two of its three expressions, or fields of influence, it is powerful in the three fields, esoteric, and hierarchical. In other words, exoteric in Capricorn, esoteric in Capricorn, and hierarchical in Libra. So those are three fields of expression, and Capricorn is found here and also here. And if you will relate what I here say to what I have said earlier, in an earlier part of this treatise, Re Capricorn, you will see how the sign of initiation hovers over our planet, as well as over the destiny of the individual disciple. Well, indeed, we have the opportunity now for humanity's initiation, and our planetary logos is passing through initiations. Capricorn may be instrumental in instigating this as well. So you have, therefore, an expression of the third ray force, which the following diagram can make clear. Okay, here we have this figure, which again, unfortunately, would not transfer into the main text, so I can go back and forth with it. So reviewing here that Saturn is related to the planet Earth through the third ray, and also related to Libra in the hierarchical sense, and so rules in three fields: exoteric Capricorn, esoteric Capricorn, and hierarchical Libra. And if we check what he says about Capricorn, we will see how the sign of initiation hovers over our planet. There is a great avatar from Capricorn who still may be with our planetary logos. I don't think of this as the avatar of synthesis, but as a different avatar who came earlier and probably will leave later, but is still very influential in terms of the initiation process on our planet. So here we have, he says, an expression of third ray force, which the following diagram makes clear, and we will look at the diagram in the book. Libra constellationally bringing in the third ray, Capricorn does as well, and even Aquarius does, interestingly enough. We are told not only the fifth ray, but there is one reference which suggests that the constellation Aquarius distributes the third ray. One can begin with Aries and move in a clockwise direction, and we'll find that Aquarius is the third sign. Saturn is related to all of these. It seems to complete a triangle here. Saturn is the hierarchical ruler of Libra and the ruler of the first decanate on the counterclockwise wheel in Aquarius. At the same time, it is also an alternate ruler of Aquarius. And Earth is off to the side, which is interesting. We'd have to ponder this. This is a method of bringing initiation, balance, and group consciousness to our planet, and to help with the expiation of karma. A strong third ray influence. This makes factual and clear that at this time the sign of balance and of initiation can be intelligently used to produce effects on our Earth, and this they will immutably do. The signs of balance, which is Libra, of course, and initiation can be intelligently used in this age of Aquarius, which we are entering via the first decanate. Many of us, not only disciples, because humanity is the world disciple as well. So the opportunity is present to build the first part of the Antikorana, which is ruled by Saturn. It connects the mental unit with the egoic lotus itself. And there is this possibility of group consciousness in the Aquarian age, with great intelligence exercised as well. So, let's see. These statements conclude what I feel it necessary to say at this time. Initiation, characterized by self-initiation, because the initiate is certainly initiate before he is technically initiated, is the demand of man today. The stars declare it and decree it. Everything has moved into position to make possible the initiation of humanity. Capricorn is involved in this. Libra is involved in the first initiation. Saturn subjects the human being to discipline, and Aquarius makes possible increasing group initiation, which will be the way that more individuals can experience this and thus hold to the time-space schedule which our planetary logos has conceived for himself. The hierarchy therefore intentionally collaborates because, let's see, we'll move this here, because the time is right and foreseen for long ages, the time for which the whole of creation groaneth and travaileth until the coming of the sons of God. The crying demand and aspirations of man indicate appreciation of the opportunity, and there we have, of course, Saturn in this figure. Saturn, presenting opportunity for initiation in collaboration with Capricorn. And recognized understanding of the proved necessity. The crying demand and aspirations of man indicate appreciation of the opportunity and recognized understanding of the proved necessity. The necessity for this on our planet at this time, if the emergence of the second ray on our planet is to prove successful. The spirit of life enforces this. These are not idle words. And perhaps we're even talking about the first aspect of divinity here. Although the monadic ray of our planetary logos is occultly non-effective, we know that the ray of our own monad, even though we as individuals are not sacred, that the ray of our monad is involved with soul expression from the time of the first initiation. So we've had several diagrams here. We're about to begin this section on the crosses. But let's just review a little bit these particular diagrams. Uranus, Mercury, and Saturn, three major planetary influences today, quite independent of whether or not they work in a triangle. We are bringing in the New Age via Aries, and the sign of the future Aquarius is there, and Libra is rising in power in the astrological chart of the planetary logos himself. All of these bringing about the transformation on Earth. The Uranus can be definitely associated with the first initiation, because it is an initiation ruled by the seventh ray, which Uranus as a soul conveys. So here we have an important triangle of transformation, bringing in a new order and spread to all. The benefits are spread to all via the distributive quality of Aquarius, and we have right human relations entering the picture so that this distribution can really occur and not be interrupted by useless and needless conflicts. These three together are instrumental in applying the seventh ray in different ways to the Earth. And so there is an elevation of human attention into the etheric body which Aquarius, which Uranus rules. In a way, the Aquarian age will be very much an age of the discovery of the ethers as a new frontier, and we will expand our knowledge of what physicality really means. Then we go to Mercury and see an interesting diagram here. It is the possibility of linking the cosmic ethers with the Earth and of overcoming the great battles which this star of conflict is related to. Every one of these signs has its connection to duality, Aries, particularly with spirit and matter, and it relates being to our usual world revealed by the senses. A Gemini will create the interplay of the soul and personality, or of consciousness and form, and make their intercommunication possible on the Earth. So there's inauguration and bipolar communication, or communication between the poles. There is also the factor of fusion of the soul and personality in Virgo. The Sun and the Mother are fused. We have not only communication between that which is of the higher mind and that which is of the lower mind, but we have their fusion and integration under Virgo. And well, whenever Scorpio enters here, there is a battle to ensure that the third aspect remains the servant of the second aspect and does not trap the second aspect of consciousness in any form of vice represented by the Hydra. So all of this has to do with the resolution of the dualities within humanity and upon the earth. And when you remember that our earth graduates are called adjudicators between the pairs of opposites, and how particularly the great war, the fourth ray war between soul and personality, is prominent on our planet, we can see how these four constellations ruled by the star of conflict bring the pairs of opposites into the correct condition and relieve them from their inharmonious state. Eventually, these opposites, let's say the secondary soul and third ray personality of the earth, are resolved through the intermediaryship of these four constellations. And then, moving just a little further to what we've just done, here are three great signs of intelligence. Aquarius rules the universal mind. Libra rules the super mind, probably the atmic mind. Saturn, a great planet of intelligence with its third ray monad, ruling the plane on which the supermind is found, ruling the plane of Libra, the atmic plane. Capricorn, the major sign of initiation. All of them conveying the third ray, but somehow lifting the third ray. Capricorn reveals the secret of the soul. Libra gives us a divine love and understanding. We learn on page 333, not just the third ray aspect. Aquarius has to do with universal love. So these are all effective in bringing about the opportunity to transfer the third ray to the second ray, to transfer the personality aspect to the soul aspect. Well, friends, this has been, I think, a difficult section in a way. You'd think if we simply look at three important planets for today. Now, they are planets which were definitely connected with the three constellations we have been studying. But he is giving us the rulership connections and how they all work together, how they all work together to elevate our Earth. Uranus and Mercury, one the higher octave of the other, and Saturn and Mercury being so important both at discipleship, accepted discipleship particularly, and also at the time of the fourth initiation, interestingly enough. I would have preferred to be able to transfer these diagrams right to the word text, but unfortunately this program is playing tricks on me, or I'm just failing to notice something that is an easy fix. So I will let this go for now. We are about ready to start a new section, a very, very important section. So this is right now the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 136A. I think I'll just leave it at that. And we're on page 550 and beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 137A, page 550. And we will begin tomorrow, if possible, with the charts, with the study of the crosses. We've been studying the spiritual aspect, which is the triangles of consciousness, the triangle hovering above the square. And how interesting when you think about initiation. Capricorn is in the form of a triangle. It is a triangular constellation ruled by Saturn, connected with the atmic plane. And we are being told that if we connect here what is said with what is earlier said about Capricorn, you will see how the sign of initiation hovers over our planet, as well as over the destiny of the individual disciple. And really, what is going on here is that the triangle is hovering above the square. Our planet is in a way a square. Its etheric body is filled with squares, which have to be made into triangles. Capricorn is turning those who are trapped in the square into free agents within the triangle, or freer agents. So our home becomes the triangle and no longer the square, and the etheric body does reflect this. So we actually have kind of a parallelogram here, don't we? It is, in a way, the, well, there are several things going on with this diagram. It is the diamond of triangular circulation that we have been seeing, but it's put on its side as a parallelogram, and that, I think, for good reason. The line to Earth and Saturn has yet to be drawn. We have all of these somehow connected to the Earth, but we do not have them directly connected. They seem to be mediated through Aquarius, which will introduce Saturn to humanity in a very forceful way through the first decanate, and thus, through the introduction of Saturn, bring in the strong Libra and Capricorn. It's a very much of a third-ray triangle, but as I said before, the problem is to elevate the third ray into the second, the personality ray into the soul ray, and the opportunity under Saturn is there to do that, because each one of these constellations carries not only the third ray, but is definitely connected with the soul, as I've been trying to say. The marriage of the soul with the personality under Libra, Capricorn revealing the secret of the soul, and Aquarius being a sign of universal love and the life more abundant. So through this triangle, perhaps of great intelligence, there can also be an elevation toward the second aspect. This is possible. All right, friends, I think I will not go on any more today. There have been seven programs here. And but since we're starting an entirely new section on the crosses, I think that's what I'll deal with tomorrow. So for the time being, farewell, and we'll see you before long with Esoteric Astrology, Adventure number 137A. Okay, bye-bye.